Have a seat. Man, I'm so glad that you guys are here this morning. How's everybody doing? Excellent. It is, as some have said, the most wonderful time of the year. I mean, I guess that person could afford all the Christmas presents they needed and didn't have that crazy family member that you see at Christmas time. You know, it's amazing to me that this season really changes everything, and it starts right after Thanksgiving. How many of you hit up Black Friday in some capacity? Let's be honest. How many of you hit up Cyber Monday? Anybody out there? How many of you haven't hit up shopping at all? You're just waiting. You got 4 or 5, days this week. You're going to take care of that. So it starts literally right after Thanksgiving's over. This whole new season comes on to us, and it's real interesting. It changes so much of the way that we live our lives. One way that it changes is it changes the music that we're willing to listen to, doesn't it? Now, this is going to blow you away, but in my home, you're allowed to listen to Christmas music starting in October. And some of you are glad you don't live in my home. I won't tell you. My wife's not in here. Well, she is in here. She is in here. I won't tell you how this thing got started. And so now the rule is, October 1st, we can listen to Christmas music as long as it's just instrumental. October 25th, and it's all on. I mean, for 2 months, you go with whatever it is you want to do. So it's kind of like Kenny G Christmas for a little bit and anything else instrumental. And then it's the whole thing goes October 25th. So it changes the music that we listen to, right? And some of you think that people play it way too early, don't you? Right? And so you've got rid of those radio stations and glad you don't have to listen to Christmas music. How many of you genuinely love Christmas music? Good, okay. That's a good bit of us. That's great. It also changes the food that we eat, right? Now, I don't know who it was that thought the meal for Thanksgiving and Christmas would be the way that it is. And I'm a little bit bitter, to be honest with you guys. I don't understand why it had to be a turkey or a ham. Where's the beef? I do not understand. This is just me. I read an article in the San Francisco Chronicle around Thanksgiving that a lot of people in the Bay Area are serving the first season's crabs for Thanksgiving, and I've trying to shift into those families a little bit. But I get to know them, and I don't know why yams made the list, or cranberry sauce, or stuffing. I don't know why any of that's on the list. And people come to me, and they're like, but Ben, it's tradition. It is great food. And I say to them, if it's so great, why do you eat it twice a year? It's just me getting it off my chest. Now, I will say this. This Thanksgiving, it was a little bit better. And maybe Christmas will be like that. I understood something. There were a few things that I liked. This Thanksgiving, we had hash brown casserole, and then we had a few other things. I realized that if I can get a starch and smother it in cheese, I'm good. I'm good. So if you're looking to hook me up for a meal, just some starch, potatoes, whatever, covered in cheese, I'm good to go. It changes that. It also changes our level of stress, either for the good or the bad, right? So if you're a person that gets a lot of vacation for Christmas time, Christmas is a great thing, right? And if you're the person, unlike most of us, that no one in your family's crazy, that can be peaceful to be with people that you love, right? But for others of us, it's much more stressful at Christmas time, isn't it? Can we be honest? If your family member's not in this room, can you just raise your hand if you have some crazy relative? All right, I just want to make sure. This is not my immediate family. They're listening to the podcast. Dad, it's not you. It's no one in my immediate family, I promise. But every one of us has that person that could at least make things real awkward or real tense at Christmas. And so Christmas really does change kind of everything for us. It changes a lot. And what I want to do this morning is give you what I believe is the most significant change to ever happen in history. What I personally believe is the most significant change to ever happen in history. If you've got a Bible, I want you to open up to the first chapter of John. If you don't have a Bible with you, we've got guys and ladies that are ready to hand it to you. So if you need a Bible either for this morning or for good, just raise your hand. Yeah, come on, we got some up here in the front, on the sides. And John, feel free to look at the table of contents. It's what's known as the fourth gospel. It's the fourth book in the New Testament, so the second half. Somebody give me what page it is in the Bibles we're passing out, and we'll make that announcement. Who's got it? 759. All right. I'm going to trust you that you're not leading the entire room astray. 759, right? It's that John. Yeah, so we'll be in chapter 1. But here's a little bit of homework I want to give you, and I really mean a little bit. This morning, what I want to do is talk about the why of Jesus' birth. What is he doing coming to earth as a baby? What is this Christmas theme? What's the big deal behind it? But I want you to read Matthew chapter 1 and 2 and Luke chapter 1 and 2. If you're a note taker, write those notes down on your card or whatever. I want you to read those because in those stories you get the beautiful picture of the what of Christmas. What was it like when Mary found out she was going to be the mother of the Son of God, right? Any moms? I would like to say we've all been surprised, but I'm not a mom. Moms, you guys are surprised, but imagine finding out that you're going to give birth to the Son of God, right? I mean, it changes a little bit, the toys you're going to get at the registry, and how are you going to figure that thing out, and who's going to find out about it, and is the doctor going to be good enough? And so you find those things out, like what was Mary's reaction, what was Joseph's reaction, pretty interesting from the male perspective. Who were the people that first visited Mary and Joseph and Jesus after he was born? What did Mary think about the experience? All that's recorded really in those four chapters. And so over the next 2 weeks, look at Matthew chapter 1 and 2, Luke chapter 1 and 2, really beautiful pictures of what took place and what we as Christians celebrate as Christmas. So pretty incredible stuff there. But in John chapter 1, verse 1 is where I want to begin. And you've got that in front of you, and also it's going to be on the screens. In verse 1 of chapter 1 of John, it says, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." And so right in the beginning, John is one of Jesus' closest friends. In fact, the Bible refers to him as the disciple whom Jesus loved. Now, just so we understand, he loved all of them. But he and John, just are like, man, what happened to the other 11? He and John had a special relationship. They experienced things together. John really was the one he told to take care of his mom when he left this earth after his death. I mean, it's a pretty major relational connection between John and Jesus. And so John is writing this after the life and death and resurrection of Jesus, and he's looking back, and the very first thing he says in this letter that he writes is, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God." Now, the Word, it's capitalized in the Bible there because it's referring to Jesus. And it's this Greek word called logos. And so what's happening here is he's saying, in the beginning was the Word. Why that title? He's saying this is God's greatest revelation. This is the message of God literally revealed in this person of Jesus. And he says something really interesting. He says he was there in the beginning. And so one thing you've got to get with the Christmas story is that Jesus doesn't just come onto the scene when he enters the earth through his mother's womb. Does that make sense? So let's not think, oh, Jesus is coming into existence. The Bible's saying, in the beginning, he was. He was with God, so he's the Son of God, and he is God. He is no less than God the Father. He is God. There is one God displayed in three distinct essences, and this is what the beautiful mystery we refer to as the Trinity. And so it says, in the beginning, Jesus is there. If you come down to verse 14, I want to read 14 to 18 so you get a picture of the why of Christmas and why I believe, really, this changes everything. And it says, "And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory. Glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth." John, that's John the Baptist he's referring to, not himself. "John bore witness about him and cried out, 'This was he of whom I said, he who comes after me ranks before me, because he was before me. And from his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, the only God who is at the Father's side, he has made him known." And so I want to unpack for us what is John, the author John, what is he going after here? Well, this huge change that I said I think is the most significant change in history is right here in the very beginning of verse 14. It says, "And the Word became flesh." Again, he became flesh. He didn't just become, because he's always been from the beginning, right? So he becomes flesh. Imagine that. God, through Jesus, becoming flesh. Pretty big shift, huh? How many of you have been dealing with any transition or change lately? How did it kind of compare to this? Like going from being just God, the Spirit, the eternal being, all of a sudden the Word becomes flesh. It's what we call, in kind of the Christian circles, we call this the incarnation. It comes from the Latin word incarnate. It means to put meat on or to put flesh on. And this is what John's saying, that Jesus became flesh. He put on meat. He became human. He became one of us. And then right there afterward, it says, "The Word became flesh and dwelt among us." The phrase "dwelt among us," it literally means that Jesus pitched his tent here on earth. Right? So literally, it is him saying, "I'm taking up residence. I'm coming to dwell. I'm not just showing up in a spirit and then disappearing. He comes as a human and says, we've seen his glory. And then this John that he says, it's John the Baptist, says, John bore witness about him. This was he of whom he said, he who came after me ranks before me. Just so we understand, John the Baptist is basically a cousin to Jesus, born months before Jesus was born. And so what John the Baptist is saying, he's referring to the divinity and to the beginning, the original starting point of Jesus. And he says, he was born after me on this earth, but he came before me because he was before me. You get into verse 18. Look at verse 18 with me. Verse 18 says, no one has ever seen God, the only God, he's referring to Jesus, who is at the Father's side, he has made him known. So let's just get the pronouns right. The he it's referring to at the end of that verse, he, that's Jesus, has made him, that's God the Father, known. It's this whole idea of answering the question, what is God really like? And I want to share a quote with you about the incarnation. J.I. Packer, who is an author and has written a lot of stuff, I think most famously the book Knowing God. And so here's what he says in Knowing God about the incarnation. He says that there's nothing in fiction so fantastic as is this truth of the incarnation. He's saying the great dramas that are out there, whatever your favorite movie is, and what is your favorite movie all time? Like Russell's in the house himself. What else? What are some other favorites? Just like all-time favorites. You've had a little time to laugh and think about that? Tombstone. Some of you are going, can I say this in church? You can. Everything's free here. You can say it. What else? What over here? Favorite movie of all time?
As Good as It Gets.
As Good as It Gets. All right. So what Packer says, he said there's no drama made up. There's no incredible fiction writer or author or movie director out there that's thought of anything quite as fantastic as God coming to earth in human form. The magnitude of this is huge. Do you understand the weight of this? He's talking about the incarnation. And so literally what it says in verse 18 there is that he, Jesus, has come to earth. Here's the big why. He's come to earth to make God known. Every one of us in this room, at some point in our lives, and maybe more frequently even now than previous years, we ask the question, what is God like? What is his character? What does he think? What's important to him? And here's the beauty of the incarnation, is that God is revealing himself in what begins the baby and ultimately the man, the human being, Jesus Christ. People want to know what God's like, and the Bible tells us really clearly, look at the life of Jesus. And so let's do that. Let's continue looking at the life of Jesus. I just want to throw a few verses on the screen without you having to turn there for the sake of time. So here's one, Colossians 1:15. It says, he, that's Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. Do you get that? Jesus is the invisible God. He's here. He is the image of the invisible God. So basically, one of the things Colossians tells us is that the incarnation happens, Christmas happens, so that Jesus can make God visible. Colossians 1:19, it says, for in him, that's in Jesus, all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. Now, we've got to understand something. When people see Jesus, they wonder, was he part human? Was he part God? What's going on here? Yes, I'm thirsty. I've got a point. What it's saying there is the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. So in Jesus is literally every drop of divinity. Isn't that incredible? That it says all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell. So he's not sort of a God. He does not have God-like qualities. He's not 50% God. All of the fullness of God was pleased to dwell in this human being, Jesus Christ. And so it's another great mystery of our faith is that he was fully God and yet at the same time fully human. Pretty mysterious, isn't it? Like, how does that work? The fullness of God lived out in the life of Jesus, the baby, then the man, right? Pretty incredible. Hebrews 1:3 says that he, Jesus, again, is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature. The exact imprint of his nature. How many of you bought Giants World Series gear?
Oh, yeah.
Anybody buys? How many of you bought counterfeit Giants World Series gear? No, seriously. You don't have to tell us. We'll just pretend it's the real thing, right? And so there were a few differences from the actual, like, Majestic or the Major League Baseball company that they hired, right? Obviously, the price was the first difference. So you have $40 for a World Series t-shirt if it was the real deal. Or I have friends that are like, hey, I'll just sew a patch on there and pretend like it came from there. Or perhaps you've been to other countries and you thought you were getting a great deal on Nike apparel and things like that. But it's not the real thing, right? Just so you understand, he's not saying that Jesus is sort of a bad copy or a bad imprint of God. He's saying in the life of Jesus, he's the radiance of the glory of God. So what he shines, what he reveals is God. And he is the exact imprint. All right? So I don't know how bad your copy machine is at work. And so your forms look a little like they're supposed to look. Jesus is not like that. He's the exact imprint. He's not just saying, hey, here's some God-like features. I've got a few of them. No, he's the exact imprint of God. Do you understand the magnitude of this change we're talking about this morning? It's huge. Do you understand what Jesus changed into and what he gave up? Let's talk about a few. First, he goes from heaven to earth, right? I love living in San Francisco. There's a lot of places on the earth that you love. What's your favorite city around the whole globe?
Bar Harbor, Maine.
Maine? Where we got? Honolulu. Come on, this is where you get to brag the rest of us that don't travel as much as you do. Where else?
San Francisco.
San Francisco. Wow, that makes things real easy. It's convenient. And so there's a lot of great cities on the globe in our state and in our country and across the world. But probably none compare quite to heaven, right? So the little bit of a shift, a little bit of a downgrade when Jesus goes from heaven to earth. He also goes from being rich to becoming poor. He goes from being rich to becoming poor. So it says other places in the Bible that Jesus created all things. And so if you can create all things, you can make yourself as rich as you want to be, right? Clear on that? And some of you are like, man, I didn't create all things, but I created one thing, and it has welcomed me into the world of the rich and famous. And others of us have tried to make things, and we did not get there. He goes from being rich to being poor. The family that Jesus is born into, what would typically happen with a Jewish child is that you would go to basically present him at the temple, and if you could afford it, you would actually give a sacrificial lamb. Well, guess who can't afford a lamb when Jesus is born? His parents. So luckily, there was provision in the law that you could give turtle doves or pigeons. And so imagine this. You're in heaven. Jesus has everything at his disposal. He can create anything he wants to create. And now he's a part of a family that can't even actually pay the full price for him to be presented as a baby boy. Pretty astounding. Another transition that happens, a huge shift that happens for him, is he goes from having no limits to placing within himself and on himself limitations. So he's got no limits in heaven, right? Everything's at his disposal. If he wants something to happen, it'll happen. If he wants it to fall, it'll fall. If he wants the sun not to rise, it won't rise. And all of a sudden, he willingly places on his own self limitations. He now is in a body. He is now confined to being in one place at one time. He now, the Bible tells us places where he gets tired. That didn't happen in heaven, just so you know. He gets hungry. Pretty amazing. Another thing, especially with the Christmas story, he goes from royalty to a stable. So he's the king of heaven, in case you don't know. He is the king of heaven. People are worshiping him in heaven. And he is born in a stable suitable only for livestock. Anybody have that experience? And lastly, he goes from sufficiency to dependency. He's all sufficient. The Bible says, actually, that everything holds together and exists because of Jesus. Sufficient, completely. Depending on no one, everyone else dependent on him. So he goes from sufficiency to dependency. So he goes from everything else being dependent upon him to now that if he doesn't nurse from his mother, he doesn't survive. So we talk about the changes we go through, right? You get a new job, lots of change, true? You're like, man, I would love to have that change. I need a job, period, or a new one. Don't raise your hand. You have new employees, you're working for a new boss, you've got a new, a desk or a corner or a crevice. I mean, you've got some place to work, and that's a lot of change. Or things are tight with your finances, and you've got to make lifestyle changes, right? You've got to cut back and not go out to eat as much, or find a smaller place, a less expensive place to live, big change. Or you move to a big city or to any city, and that's quite a change, right? Jesus goes from heaven to earth, from being rich to poor, from having no limits to limitations, from being royalty to being born in a stable. He goes from having all sufficiency to all dependency. The question we've got to answer with this magnitude of change is why in the world would he do this? You know, I think part of it has to do with the fact that God is interested in a relationship with human beings. And God knows He's God, right? He knows that we're not going to ever relate to Him as a God. You guys do know that, right? Just look at your neighbor, and even if you don't believe this, and just say you're never going to be God. Just do that real quick. Especially if it's an awkward person you haven't said hi to yet. It's a pretty good greeting. Like, you can be my husband, you just can't be God. I mean, whatever you need to tell him this morning, we're all about to hook up here. I mean that in the best way possible. So he knows we can't relate to him as a God, so what he does, rather than us becoming one of him, which we can't do, he becomes one of us. Listen to what Tim Keller says in his great work, The Reason for God. Keller says, in the most radical way, God has adjusted to us in his incarnation, which we're talking about this morning, and his atonement, his death on the cross. In the most profound way, God has said to us in Christ, I will adjust to you. I will change for you. Interesting. God has adjusted to us. God has adjusted to us. He's changed for us. The 16th century theologian John Calvin, really popular, perhaps you've heard of him, he said that in the incarnation, what's happening is that God is accommodating us. Now, my little 3-year-old Asher, well, he'll turn 3 a week from today. I think I've got a picture up of him somewhere along the way here, coming up. All right, so that is our youngest son. A week from today, Asher turns 3. We have 3 boys, and he's the youngest. Now, when he and I go out around the city, we're walking places. He was on a scooter yesterday. Well, you know, he's on a scooter, then I'm pushing on the scooter, then I'm carrying the scooter, but you get the idea. We rode a train yesterday. He likes to ride buses. We walk the city. While he's quite the athlete, he and I do not walk at the same pace. So 2 options, really, right? I can walk at my pace and tell him to fend for himself. You guys turn me in. I can't be a part of the church anymore. Or I can slow down, and I can accommodate him by walking at his pace. Or I can get impatient and carry him, right? And work my pace in. But for the sake of the illustration, I'm accommodating him by walking hand in hand with him. What Calvin's saying is that in the incarnation, what God is doing is he's accommodating us. Hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying that God does relationship or life with us on our terms. With me? Many people out there living a life and even are teaching things like this that basically they can have an opinion or a made-up idea of God and then they ask God to submit to that standard. Just so you know, friends, that's never going to happen. Not in real life. He's not waiting for you to have a great idea for him to jump on board with it, okay? He's got some great ideas he's waiting for us to hop on board. But in the incarnation, God is willing to take on humanity. Jesus becomes a baby. Jesus grows as a boy. He becomes a man. Because he wants to reveal to us what God's really like. It's amazing to me the lengths he's gone to pursue us. Have you ever pursued after a person, and you don't have to raise your hand, I'm not talking about like a weird stalking thing, okay? Facebook or otherwise, I'm not talking about stalking. But have you ever, and you don't have to raise your hand in case you're pursuing the person beside you, you don't want them to know that. If you ever pursue someone, what we all know in those moments is that anything goes, right? We spend money on them that we do not have, right? It's been years since you asked your parents for a loan, but if you've got a girl or a guy you're pursuing, you're like, hey, Mom, Dad, I need that. Give me my inheritance now, right? If you're pursuing people, you'll do whatever it takes. You will go watch a movie with them multiple times that 3 weeks ago you were making fun of with your friends. Won't you? Oh, you want to see that? Yeah, I cannot wait. Do you like chiclets? It's my favorite. I hope my guys aren't here hearing this. You know, you'll stay up and watch the sunrise with that person because you just want them to know what your desire is. And you're willing to do whatever it takes. And what I think is beautiful about the incarnation is that God has revealed his desire to us. Now, obviously, every person in this room, we can choose to believe what the Bible's saying here this morning or not. But if you believe it, what in the world could God have done better or different to pursue us? He becomes one of us. He becomes one of us. I'm sure you're a great person, but you're not God, right? And so I'm not sure that's a great option. But he's sure that it is. He's sure that it's the way. It's the part of the plan of his redemption for humanity. So he becomes one of us. He accommodates us. He changes for us. He reveals to us what God's really like. And it's not just to come as a baby boy and live on this earth to say, here's what God's like and what he cares about. He's come to grow up to be a man who dies on the cross and pays this cruel and high price for the salvation of men and women. It blows my mind. It's interesting to me that Jesus comes knowing how things are going to go. Knowing that things would get messy on earth, he still comes. Knowing that we are not going to be great at loving each other. Oh, let's face it, we are horrible, right? Humanity at loving each other. Knowing that we would not be able to give him what he deserves in return. Knowing that we would reject him and go our own way, he still comes. Knowing that one day we would kill him, though he's never done anything wrong to us, he comes anyway. I don't know any clearer how to explain the message of Christianity other than saying that God is pursuing you and he's been willing to do whatever it takes. That's what the story of the incarnation really is about. You know, most of us, we get into a deal when we realize that the value of what we're getting is higher than what we're paying for, right? If you don't get into deals like that, if you don't shop like that, you should. Right? Don't buy things where you feel like what you're giving to something is a higher price or higher value than what you're getting from it. Yeah, Jesus comes anyway, knowing how things are going to go, knowing he's not going to get the best end of the deal. So what do we do? What do we do? Well, this Thursday, Shauna and I, Shauna, would you raise your hand? Beautiful wife sitting in the back there. She's afraid of spitting on her. Shauna and I will celebrate our 10th anniversary this Thursday. It's a pretty big deal in our society. I mean, give it up for her at least, right? To beat the average at least. So we're going to celebrate 10 years, and I'll never forget, obviously, I don't need to forget how this whole thing began. We met working at a summer camp, and then after that summer was over, I went to where I was going to college, and she was back where she was going to college. And I had grand visions of pursuing her, like we just talked about, with money that I didn't have, and her saying yes to everything I asked, right? Like, I literally had visions that I would fly to see her on this Labor Day weekend, so I did. I paid $364. I still remember. You'll know why in just a second. $364, I thought, I'm going to go see her. I'm going to fly to Virginia to see her where she's in school. And by the end of our trip, she's going to want to have my children. So go up there and go out a couple nights. We're hanging out with some of her college friends. And things are okay, but not great. But you're like, maybe she's just hard to get. Nope, I wasn't it. So by the end of my time in Virginia, we're driving to the airport. Great time, and she says, hey, I just want you to know I'm not interested in a relationship with you right now. Teleprompter will be up next service. Just so man, wake up. And so she wanted to be my friend. And so I fly back home to Louisiana, where I was living at the time. And I'm not sure that's going to work. But I did. I said, hey, we can rebuild this friendship, and I just want you to know my desires. I would love to be in a relationship with you and you know, marry whatever today. And I said, if my desires change, I'll let you know. And so we do build a friendship back, and we're getting to know each other. And then one day in October of 1999, she sends me an email, and the email simply says this: Ben, I know what I want. The ball's in your court. And it was real easy to make my decision, right? Once I understood what her intentions were, it was real easy for me to, you know, this was back in the day. Please, I mean, don't make me feel old here. This is back in the day when you had calling cards. So I'm dialing, like, I think it was 10-10-2-1-2-2-1 or something like that. 5 cents a minute, and, you know, at home and not doing the cell phone thing yet. And it was real easy to respond to her because I knew what her intentions were. She had made them really clearly known, wouldn't you say? And then I wanted to play hard to get it. No, she was going to change her mind. I responded right away. One of the things I hope that you've seen this morning is that God has made his intentions known. God has made it really, really clear to me, and I hope that you've seen this morning, really clear to me, the price that he was willing to pay. He gave up a whole lot so that he might accommodate us, so that he might change for us, so that we might relate to him. And I don't know what that response looks like for you, if it's just another step towards embracing who God is in Jesus. I don't know if it is, you've done this a long time and it just becomes stagnant and stale and you just needed a reminder. Perhaps this morning for you it's like, man, I'm not sure I'm even in on this. I'm not sure I believe this. My prayer for you is that God would make it clear to you. That you would trust him. And regardless of what you've done in your life, or how bad it is, or the doubts that you've even had about God himself, I pray that whatever has happened this morning, I pray that you have clearly seen the great lengths that God would go to and has gone to so that you and I might know what he's like, and ultimately that he might pay the price for our sin, that we could live in a relationship with him forever. Would you guys pray with me this morning as we continue to worship? God, I do thank you that you have gone to great lengths to pursue us. God, I thank you that you care about us. Jesus, that you became one of us. God, I just pray that you would do some work in our hearts this morning, God, and our minds as well. God, help us to embrace everything that you've presented yourself to be this morning. Help us to know that in our heart of hearts, God, that what we've read, what we've heard is true. That you became flesh and dwelled among us. Jesus, you came to make God known. So we don't have to ask, what is God like? We can literally look at your life and your death and your resurrection and see that. God, we just confess that we are desperately in need of your power in our lives. We've tried to do it on our own for so long. Pray that the truth of what we've heard this morning just would explode in our hearts and really make a difference tangibly this week in our lives. God, for some of us in this room, today is the day where we need to embrace you, Jesus, as Savior. Realize that you've come to forgive us of our sins and to rescue us. You've paid a ransom for us. We're grateful for that. And God, during this Christmas season, I pray that you protect us in this room. God, I pray that we would have a good time with family and friends. God, that we would live in peace and not stress. And that we would celebrate what I still believe is the greatest change in history. All this I pray in Jesus' name.